Good morning. Can you hear in the back okay? Good, good. The court calls United States v. Humphreys. As this is a certified case, the government will go first and play the role of the appellant. Thank you.
May it please the court. Lieutenant Colonel Attendere and I have the privilege of representing the Air Force in this case. First, under a de novo review of this question of law, the Air Force Court's decision is incompatible with Article 60 and cannot stand. Second, the Air Force Court also exceeded its power and abused its discretion by concluding that a Babcock discharge was inappropriately severe. First, on the Article 60 question.
Do we have to decide two if we decide one your way? Does it make any difference whether they erred in finding it inappropriate? Isn't the Article 60 question a pure question of law?
It is a pure question of law.
Then what do we have to do with, you spend about 85% of your brief on sentence appropriateness. Do we really have to decide that?
In fairness, no, Your Honor. You could resolve this case
by
Article 60. Yes, Your Honor. The CCA engaged in unauthorized appellate clemency in violation of Article 60. Article 60 very clearly states that it is a matter of command prerogative involving the sole discretion of the convening authority. And this court has defined sole discretion as clear, unfettered discretion. Unfettered discretion. Very powerful indeed. Though in fact, the CCA in this case sought to greatly restrict, limit, fetter, control, and direct
the
convening authority.
The CCA characterized what it did as appropriateness review, did it not?
Well, that's a difficult question, Your Honor, because they were doing a couple things at once.
Let's stipulate.
What?
They called it.
I said, what did they call it?
Well, they didn't call it appellate clemency. I'll give them that.
So let's just stipulate that they purported to be acting under their appropriateness authority. And you characterize it as clemency, but let's, at least for the sake of the question, say it's appropriateness authority. What legal standard do we apply to our review of appropriateness authority, if any?
Well, if it's truly a sentence appropriateness question, you're looking for an abuse of discretion. Was it the court has spoken in terms of arbitrary, capricious, miscarriage of justice? Clearly, the court has spoken in terms of that standard when merely looking at a sentence appropriateness decision.
Is it your view that the CCA engage in clemency and or, let me try that again. Do we have to determine that they engage in clemency in order to look at the question of whether they abuse their discretion?
No, Your Honor. This is an unusual case because both issues are at play here. On the one hand, a question of law about appellate clemency in Article 60, while at the same time, what prompted it was their sentence determination in the first instance. And that's why the United States certified this as a single issue. There's really a synergy between the two that led them ultimately to violate Article 60.
Is acting in an arbitrary or capricious manner a legal error?
Well, this court's review of it is a question of law. You do give them deference. There's no doubt when purely looking at a sentence appropriateness determination. It has to be arbitrary or capricious.
But is that a legal standard? It's a question, not a statement.
For this court, it is a legal standard. Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, in NIRAD, when we were looking at the issue of whether their action on a finding was appropriate, we both noted that they're not required to explain themselves, and we acknowledged the fact that appropriateness is within their purview, while noting that we can determine whether they've applied the correct legal standard. In that case, as I understood it at least, we talked about a number of factors that they could look at, and we said that none of them are dispositive, that they don't have to explain themselves, and then we noted that we were concerned because of their statement that the finding was, quote, not the sort of conduct which warrants criminal prosecution. What similar statement is there in the CCA's opinions in this case that would cause us to have any question as to whether we could even look to whether they had applied the correct legal standard?
That's a great question, Your Honor, and we fully agree that the CCA is not required to explain their Article 66 decisions. However, they did so in this case. They expressly created a mitigation and an aggravation and mitigation ledger, if you will, in the text of their opinion. And on the one side, the aggravation side, they articulated a very clear case of aggravation, the deployment, the children nearby, the base housing, a whole host of factors that the court itself found to be aggravating. And then on the mitigation side of their ledger, as expressed in their opinion, basically they gave us their deliberative process. The only fact that they pointed to was the consensual nature of his consensual crimes. And that is an abuse of discretion. That's arbitrary.
But counsel, in this case, they talked about the consensual nature and the facts and circumstances of all the case, and they never said, in fact, I thought that they went to the extremes to make sure that they weren't saying that this sort of action could not get a BCD. In fact, didn't they say that a lower court had erred when they relied on the earlier decision for that precise point?
Well, that's another...
I mean, because it seems to me that what you're asking us to do is to agree with you that this sentence was appropriate, which is a different issue than we were asked to look at in NERAD.
Well, no,
I mean, that's not what we did there. We didn't say the finding was appropriate or not appropriate. We said we had a question as to whether they had applied the correct law in reaching the decision that they did, which is, it's a very fine line between asking us to do that which we may do and asking us to do that which we may not do.
Your Honor, what this court said in NERAD was that they must apply legal principles, not equitable ones, not policy considerations when exercising their Article 66 responsibilities. And that's what they precisely admitted to doing in NERAD once they issued their remanded opinion. Likewise, that's what they have done here. They haven't, again, they did not have to explain their deliberative process, but they did. And the only fact that pushed them over the edge to an inappropriate severe sentence was the consensual nature of his consensual crimes. They argued, in their mind, the elements of the crime somehow mitigated the crime itself, and that just doesn't make sense.
If they don't need to explain themselves, leaving aside the fact that you say they did here, then how is this other than a totally standardless determination?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, could you repeat the question?
If they don't need to explain themselves, yes, leaving aside the fact that you assert that they did here,
yes, Your Honor,
then how is this anything but an utterly standardless determination on our part?
Well, Your Honor, if they had just said that they had considered the offender, considered the offenses, considered the record of trial, and found the sentence to be inappropriately severe, the government would be extremely hard-pressed to argue that that was an abuse of discretion. But those are not the facts before us. They opened their deliberative process to us in an unusually written CCA opinion. If we didn't have that information, I wouldn't have that argument here today, Your Honor. I admit that freely.
Counsel, I'm trying to figure out where they said or didn't say that. They've referred to the unique facts and circumstances of the case and the consensual nature. That's in the conjunctive, isn't it? That is, they didn't, as I read their opinion, it didn't say we're altering the sentence here, finding the sentence inappropriate because it's consensual. They said, based on the record and the unique facts and circumstances and the fact that it was consensual. So there are a series of things which they may not, if your point is that they needed to identify those unique facts and circumstances, that'd be an interesting way for us to start looking at sentence appropriateness.
Oh, no, Your Honor, I don't suggest they are required to do that.
Well, but if they're not, and they refer in the conjunctive to the unique facts and circumstances on one hand and the consensual act on the other, then don't we look at that for determining whether they abuse their discretion or not?
Your Honor, we read their opinion slightly in a different manner. They said they looked at the unique circumstances of the case, and then they told us what they found. They found all this aggravation, and they found one point that they could cite to that was mitigation, and it was the consensual nature of his consensual crimes. That's all they articulated. But in our view, they said they looked at the case, and here's what we found.
So if they said nothing, this would be okay.
We could not attack their analysis if they had said that they had considered the offense, considered the offender, considered the record of trial, and they found it to be an inappropriate.
Do you want to win?
I'm sorry?
I mean, do you really want to win? If you win on that, isn't the message just determine sentence inappropriateness with silent opinions? Isn't the system better served by a more open process?
I can't argue with that, but I don't think the law requires them to show their deliberative process. I don't think there's any authority for me to suggest that, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Going to say, counsel, don't you think that you would have a stronger case if they said this is not the sort of behavior that should ever get a BCD instead of saying the exact opposite, which is we're not saying that?
Well,
I mean, because the problem I have is it seems to me that what you're asking us to do is go back into the record, look at the facts and circumstances, and see whether we think that a BCD was appropriate or not. And we can't do that.
No, Your Honor, I'm not asking you to do that. I'm asking you to
determine whether the things that they listed were right or not. How is that any different?
Well, I'm asking you to consider that what they told us, Your Honor, as their thought process. They didn't have to lay it out for us, but they did. And frankly, it just doesn't make any sense to base the entire decision on the consensual nature of the consensual crimes. They didn't have to tell us that, but they did. And
well,
that's
your characterization of what they said.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
They said that the panel determined that the appellant's crimes were consensual. The CCA said that.
Correct.
Did the panel, in fact, determine that, or did they find him not guilty of forcible sodomy?
Well,
did they actually come back with a finding of consent?
They came back with a finding of consensual sodomy, yes, Your Honor, a lesser-included offense of forcible sodomy. So I would answer that.
So they actually found consent?
They have to find consent as to the sodomy.
Do they have to? In other words, couldn't this have been a legally sufficient case if they had simply returned a finding guilty on sodomy without specifying it being consensual or not?
Well, I believe the specification in front of them had pled the act of force and lack of consent.
Right, but what if they found that it wasn't, they couldn't conclude that it was forcible beyond a reasonable doubt, but they didn't have to say it was consensual. They could say, we can't determine that it was forcible beyond a reasonable doubt, therefore we're not going to convict on forcible sodomy, but just sodomy. Is it, you follow?
I think
determination that something is not forcible beyond a reasonable doubt is not necessarily the same thing as a finding that something is consensual.
Yes, Your Honor.
What do we have in this case, and why does it help or not help your case?
Well, I think we have a finding of consensual sodomy. We have adultery when rape had been charged. I think that the CCA's conclusion that these were consent crimes is not alone a faulty one. That's not our difficulty with their decision.
Is it a conclusion on their part, or is it simply a recitation of what the findings were in the case?
Well, the members didn't stand up and articulate that these were consensual crimes, but that is the only logical conclusion to be drawn from their findings.
Isn't that what it says in the report of the trial and the promulgating order in this case, that it was consensual?
As to the sodomy, yes.
Yeah.
But adultery, there's no place to put that word consent into an adultery spec, even though that's the logical import of it.
In this case, the members returned a sentence which included no confinement. Is that a factor that the Court of Criminal Appeals could rely on as one of the facts and circumstances in this case in determining what might be an appropriate sentence?
Certainly, Your Honor.
In this case, the defense has stated in its brief that the convening authority is not bound by the decision of the Court of Criminal Appeals in this case, apparently treating it as somewhat suggestive, and that the convening authority upon remand would be able to approve a sentence that includes an unsuspended bad conduct discharge. Does the government object to that if that were part of a decision of this case, saying that if the convening authority can do that?
We absolutely do object, Your Honor.
So you object to having the convening authority give you what you want?
Your Honor, we object to CCA getting in the business of the convening authority's sole discretion in the first instance. It is frankly irrelevant what the CCA thought about the sentence when the convening authority is making his determination.
So from now on, CCAs can no longer remand cases to convening authorities and say that you may approve a sentence no greater than X? Isn't that a fairly routine sense appropriateness decretal paragraph on the part of the courts of criminal appeals?
Not in the scope of sentence appropriateness. That's common in the case where there's been a legal error found by the appellate court and a case is remanded for sentence rehearing or sentence reassessment. A very different animal than what we have here.
Has any court ever said that that's an inappropriate decretal paragraph in a sentence appropriateness case for the Court of Criminal Appeals to say, we find that X 60 years is inappropriate here and that we return this and the convening authority can approve a sentence no greater than X minus Y years?
Your Honor, the majority of Clark did not agree with that. They did not agree with Judge Everett's erroneous view of the law in the first instance, and they politely called him out in the Clark opinion itself. Where the majority of Clark said, we must take the law as we find it and interpret it according to our best judicial judgment. We're not free to create new law in the guise of judicial interpretation. There's no doubt that there are cases where the power of suspension would be beneficial.
I'm not talking about suspension. Just talking about a normal decretal paragraph by the Court of Criminal Appeals.
This was not a normal decretal.
I'm just asking a question. Can the Court of Criminal Appeals, in a sentence appropriate in this case, say that the convening authority may approve a sentence no greater than X? And if they can't, is there a case that stands for that proposition? I'm just asking for the source of law here.
I don't think there's a case that would say that because there's no reason for such a principle of law. Because why would a convening authority care what a CCA thought when he's making his sole determination under Article 60 in the first instance? It is simply irrelevant what the CCA thought. It has nothing to do with the convening authority's sole discretion.
You don't think that that gives the convening authority more authority than he might otherwise have to know that he can either give a BCD or he can give a suspended BCD? And he can make those decisions knowing that if he just gives a BCD, that that's going to be disapproved, whereas if he chooses to give a suspended BCD, that would be approved.
No, Your Honor. He already had full authority to do whatever he thought.
And how does the CCA, under its statutory authority, not have the authority to make a sentence appropriateness determination?
Because
I thought that part of the reason that Congress gave them that authority was so that, it's not this case, but they see 100 drug cases, for example, and usually someone uses marijuana and they get a year and a BCD. And then they get a case and the guy gets 10 years and a dishonorable discharge for a single marijuana use. I don't know what the statutory maximum is, so I'm making it up. Without explanation, why couldn't they simply say, we're disapproved. We looked at the facts and circumstances of this case and we're disapproving the BCD as inappropriately severe.
Your Honor, I see my time has expired. May I answer the question?
You may. Thank you for asking.
Yes, Your Honor.
Your Honor,
I understand that's not this case, but it's the principle.
Your Honor, I guess I'm drawn back to the fact that nobody has seen fit to change the law as suggested by Judge Everett in 1983. If you look at the 1984 manual, Article 60 reads the same in 1984 as it does today.
Well, what about Healy?
Healy, Your Honor, a great question. May I answer, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you.
Would you like your question answered?
Please.
Okay.
I see that my time has expired. I don't want to.
You're on your time, though.
All right, Your Honor. I'm glad you brought up footnote 4, Your Honor. First off, we need to look at Healy in the first instance. The holding of Healy was whether or not a convening authority was required to consider additional clemency matter that's submitted after a convening authority has taken action, and this court held no. That's the holding of Healy.
But isn't the language in the footnote pretty clear?
The language in the footnote is absolute dicta that had nothing to do with the holding in Healy in the first instance. In the first sentence of footnote 4, Judge Everett, just 5 years after the Clark opinion, first sentence he cites to the actual holding in Clark, the majority holding. And then he cites in the second sentence a reference to his concurring opinion. At best, it's dicta, but frankly, Your Honor, footnote 4 is absolutely incompatible with Article 60, and it should be rejected by this court.
Are you suggesting that Judges Cox and Sullivan didn't read the opinion before they concurred in it?
I can't explain why they allowed footnote 4 to stand.
Well, maybe because...
Has your question been answered?
It has been.
Why don't you save this for rebuttal, if you would?
Judge Baker, if I could just, I'd still like to get an answer to the question I asked earlier. Perhaps it wasn't clear. The defense has said in its brief that the convening authority can approve an unsuspended BCD when this case is remanded. Does the government disagree with that?
Your Honor, to answer that question, I think you need to look at both decisions from the CCA. In the first case, they told the convening authority what they were going to do, and they were going to disapprove the BCD. Then in the second decision from the CCA, which you have to look carefully at, it was remanded to them solely to act on the findings. They acted on the findings. The United States asked the CCA to reconsider its sentence decision so that we wouldn't have to come back before this court to argue here today. The CCA refused to do so, said they had no authority to act on the sentence. So I think it was at best gratuitous. Any additional discussion in that second CCA decision where they conveniently took out the fact that they will disapprove the BCD upon
all of which may be true, but
what's the answer?
I think Judge Efron's question ultimately can result in a yes or no answer, which is
the CCA said they would disapprove the discharge when it came back to them.
But could the CCA nonetheless approve a BCD?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Could the CA nonetheless approve a BCD?
He could. He could. Knowing full well what was hanging over his head. Absolutely.
Thank you, counsel. I guess we'll call you the appellee. You get bonus time if you need it. You're not required to take it. We're not asking you to take it, but it is available if needed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Judge Baker, may it please the court. The certified issue in this case encompasses two decisional issues. First, should this court disturb the lower court's decision that the sentence as approved was inappropriately severe? Second, may a CCA remand a case to a convenient authority with guidance that the CCA will approve no more than an unsuspended BCD? Turning to the first issue, should this court disturb the lower court's sentence appropriateness determination? The original opinion of the lower court twice stated that sentence appropriateness determinations are made on the basis of the entire record. The lower court correctly stated that a sentence appropriateness determination is to be made in consideration of the character of the accused.
Counsel, I'll ask you the same question I asked the government, which is, do we need to get into this, or can we simply decide the legal issue?
Your Honor, we believe that this is a threshold issue to the second issue. In other words, there would be no cause to determine whether the CCA could remand the case in the nature that it did unless this court chooses not to disturb the lower court sentence appropriateness determination. So we think this is the threshold issue, Your Honor.
Is a CCA's exercise of appropriateness subject to this court's review?
Your Honor, this court traditionally, in cases like Higbee and Turner and Dukes, answered that question in the negative, and we believe that is the correct answer, Your Honor. However, in this case, because
do we not have cases that indicate that you review appropriateness for an abuse of discretion, arbitrary, capricious, miscarriage of justice? What's all that stuff?
Yes, Your Honor. Dukes makes clear that there's a distinction, and none of this is necessary to decide this case, Your Honor.
I understand that. I'm asking you a different question.
Yes, Your Honor. I understand. I just want to make clear that I realize the court may not agree with the answer I'm about to give. I just want to make clear that this argument is not necessary for the defense's argument. Dukes makes clear that that a case can go one of two paths upon a sentence appropriateness review. The lower court can say a portion of that sentence is inappropriate, and under Dukes and Higbee and Turner, this court can't review that, Your Honor. Or it can say the sentence is appropriate and it can affirm. And Article 67 clearly gives this court the authority to act on a sentence that is affirmed by the lower court. So this court applies the abuse of discretion standard where the lower court has affirmed a sentence, where it has rejected a sentence appropriateness challenge. But under Dukes, not where the lower court has set aside part of a sentence.
So that means, in your view, even if a CCA acts in a, they say, we are acting in an arbitrary and capricious manner and disapproving this portion of the sentence, that is not subject to review.
Yes, sir. Under our view, under our reading of Article 67, that would, this court could not act with respect to the sentence in that situation. I realize that this court in NERAD and Leak has taken a different view of 67 in the findings context. And again,
why is that not, and we're arguing this abstraction, not your case, why is it not a contrary to the legal intent of Congress and what the word appropriateness means for them to say, we are intentionally engaging in a miscarriage of justice?
Yes, Your Honor. There are other ways to deal with that, Your Honor. And you know, there lots of things can go wrong in a judicial system. A judge could give erroneous instructions to the members that results in a finding of not guilty, where correct instructions would have resulted in a conviction. The law doesn't provide a remedy for that. The law doesn't provide a remedy for every mistake.
Is it remedyless because it's standardless? Or is it remedyless because it's insulated from review?
The latter, Your Honor. There are standards. There are clear standards. Article 66 itself includes standards, one of which tells the CCA, base this review on the entire record, as the CCA told us.
That's not a standard of review. That's something else. You've got to take into account the whole record, but that doesn't get you very far.
But Your Honor, we think it is important because, of course, there have been cases that have arisen about whether, and Healy is one of them, about whether a CCA should look beyond the record. So it's a limitation on the CCA's review. And it tells the CCA what it's supposed to consider when it makes this determination. And we know from the opinion in this case that is what the CCA considered. And
well, what if they consider something else? Still subject to no review.
Your Honor, well, it's not that it's subject to no review. And again,
we have reviewed astrology charts and on the basis of astrology determined that the sentence is inappropriately severe.
Yes, Your Honor.
Not subject to our review.
Well, Your Honor, it is subject to review upon certification. Article 67 makes that clear. It's just not subject to this court's action. But again, that's not an issue that is necessary
so
to
you're
resolve
saying,
this case.
So henceforth, CCA should simply, I'm being smart aleck now, but you're saying if they put in there that they looked at astrology charts, that is beyond reach by this court because they can do whatever they wish.
Your Honor, this court could review that. This court could say that was an inappropriate consideration. Just our reading of Article 67 says this court may not act with respect to the sentence where the court has done that. But again, not necessary to resolve this case, Your Honor.
When you talk about us acting, I mean, that's where I guess I got a little bit confused with your brief, is when you talked about NERAD as though we acted on the finding, you know, that there was some action, when it appeared to me, at least, that what we were doing was looking to see whether they had applied an incorrect principle of law and saying, it looks like you may have, looked at it again. So that's why I was asking the government's counsel in this case, you know, isn't it a fine line between asking us to look at something that is blatantly problematic in terms of being based on something that they cannot do and something that on its face appears to be fairly vanilla?
Yes, Your Honor. And, of course, in NERAD, you know, if you look at the legislative history of the UCMJ, it's clear that courts can't do what the court purported to do in NERAD according to the congressional intent. Here, on the other hand, the court was carrying out exactly the congressional intent in performing a sentence appropriateness review. And again, it's not necessary to revisit all these issues from NERAD in order to decide this case. It's simply unnecessary because, assuming arguendo that the same legal standard that NERAD identified for factual sufficiency applies in the sentence appropriateness determined area, was the lower court influenced by an erroneous view of the law? The answer to that question is clear, and the lower court was not influenced by an erroneous view of the law, Your Honor.
Counsel, let's turn to the question I asked the government in this case. Put aside the question of suspension. As a matter of practice, history, precedent, are the courts of criminal appeals prohibited, and have they self-restricted themselves? Have they been self-restricted in issuing the following decretal paragraph? We find the sentence inappropriate, and we remand the case, and the convening authority can approve a sentence no greater than X. Not talking about suspension, just, for example, number of years for confinement. What's been the practice? What's the history in that area?
CCAs have done that, Your Honor.
Is there any precedent that says that they cannot do that?
No, Your Honor. On the contrary, there's precedent that indicates they can. There was footnote 4 of Healy, but beyond that, there was also this court's summary disposition in Bell.
I'm not talking about suspension now. I'm just talking about the generalized practice of saying you may approve a sentence no greater than X, 50 years, no greater than 40 years. Is that novel for courts of criminal appeals to do that?
Not at all, Your Honor. Not at all. Additionally, in a context where there's been legal error, this court has done that in the past, Your Honor.
What about sentence appropriateness? What's the practice there? Is there a practice, and has anyone said that it's incorrect?
There is such a practice, Your Honor, and no court has said that that's impermissible.
Turning to the question of the convening authority's action upon remand, your brief, you say that the convening authority can approve a bad conduct discharge in this case. Upon return of that case to the Court of Criminal Appeals, can the Court of Criminal Appeals approve a bad conduct discharge?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
Because it has already found that an unsuspended bad conduct discharge is inappropriately severe.
And what would prohibit them from taking another look at the case based upon the entire record of the case, including whatever the convening authority might put in the record, either by virtue of the staff judge advocate's advice or what the convening authority might say himself or herself, saying that upon further review of this case at the convening authority level, we note the following factors, and that's why we continue to believe that, that's why I, the convening authority, continue to believe BCD is appropriate. What prohibits the Court of Criminal Appeals from saying, we're taking another look at that, and you're right?
The short answer is nothing. They could do that. But
they could do that. That's my question.
Yes, Your Honor, but there would be stare decisis and law of the case doctrine would provide an emergency brake. You know, you'd have to push on the accelerator really hard to overcome.
They're buffers, but they're not prohibitions.
Correct. Yes, Your Honor, exactly.
So I guess
they could also reconsider en banc. I mean, there are a number of ways that they could arrive at a different answer if it came back.
So the convening authority is not bound, and the Court of Criminal Appeals is not bound, either in the panel level or en banc. And so whether we call it jurisdiction, as you called it in your brief, or if we stick with NIRAD and Leak and say that there's not a jurisdictional problem, we talk about it as a prudential concept of ripeness. Is it appropriate for us to hear this case now, or should we let the process play out and see what the convening authority does and what the Court of Criminal Appeals does upon further review?
We think it's perfectly appropriate to let it play out, Your Honor. One of the beauties of Judge Everett, the Chief Judge Everett's suggestion in Clark is as Your Honor's question suggests, there's almost an opportunity for a dialogue between the CCA and the convening authority through this process. And really, you know, when we look at what happens when the case goes back from the CCA to the CA, it doesn't constrain the convening authority's discretion. It actually expands the convening authority's discretion. Because if it weren't for the Clark, Healy, Bell approach, the CCA would simply do away with the BCD. And so if you asked the commander of 12th Air Force, look, you have two options. One is the CCA is going to take the BCD away, nothing you can do. The second option is the case is going back, and you can, if you think it's appropriate to express your moral outrage at the offense, you're perfectly free to reapprove that BCD. You're free to suspend it. You can modify it by changing the BCD into some lesser form of punishment. You could change it into forfeitures. You have a number of options. That actually expands the discretion of the commander rather than restricting it.
But if the convening authority, in fact, were constrained by the, as in law, constrained by the CCA, that is, if the CCA said, we won't approve anything greater, then that would be close to a meaningless act. At that point, that is, the convening authority could do various conversions, as you say, but the approval of the BCD would be meaningless if the CCA itself were bound by its prior decision.
Well, if it were, Your Honor, and of course, as we previously discussed, our view is they aren't. But we still wouldn't view it as a meaningless act. I mean, a commander may very well choose to say, I want to express my moral outrage about some offense that gets sent back by a CCA, and I want to express the view to my troops about how unacceptable I find this, and as a matter of general deterrence, that CA may choose to approve the sentence, even though the CA realizes that the CCA is going to set it aside. We don't view that as meaningless.
Yeah, I'd like to see the litigation in the next case where the convening authority wrote a document that said, I want to express my moral outrage about the way these cases are treated, and this is how I think this type of case should be treated.
I was referring to an internal thought process there, Guard. I would agree that there would be UCI implications if the CA were to say that. But the CA, I'm just saying that there may be reasons why a commander would choose to reapprove a sentence, even realizing that some higher authority is going to interfere with it. But the bigger way in which it expands his discretion, again, is that BCD can be taken away from him entirely, or he can keep a suspended BCD. And as just like Chief Judge Everett discussed in his Clark concurrence, there's a range of severity. And surely a suspended BCD is less severe than an unsuspended BCD, but more severe than no BCD. So the CA can keep something in the intermediate range. And again, the CA is perfectly free to modify that BCD into some lesser form of punishment. And so again, it expands the discretion of the CA. It furthers Article 60. And the lower court referred to this being a commander's program, the military justice system, and said—
That's pretty cold comfort for the CA, isn't it? Aren't you, in fact, browbeating him into extending clemency? We always, appropriateness is a function for the CCA. Clemency is a function for the convening authority.
Yes, sir.
The CCA is free to say, we find this sentence inappropriate. Poof. But instead, it cabins the convening authority, who has discretion under Article 60, and says, convening authority, you can only do thus and such. And that's clemency, because that's what convening authorities do.
Well, no, Your
Honor. So aren't they doing indirectly what they cannot do directly?
No, Your Honor. And that is because courts often limit what a convening authority can do upon remand for legal reasons.
This isn't a legal reason.
Well, Your Honor, it's
appropriateness.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which for the convening authority translates into clemency.
But, Your Honor, this court's case law, Healy being a leading example, is clear, and the lower court was clear, this is not clemency. And this court's case law has drawn a distinction between sentence appropriateness, which is saying what is a just punishment, and clemency, which is saying, okay, there's a just punishment, and we're going to, as a matter of mercy, give you a sentence less than the just punishment. That's not what's going on here, Your Honor. So what's going on here is
that the convening authority is exercising indirectly appropriateness, which he has no power to do.
No, Your Honor, it's the verb you used earlier, Your Honor. The CCA is cabining the exercise of discretion by the appropriateness standard.
And why doesn't that equate to clemency?
No, Your Honor, because again, the court is saying an unsuspended BCD would be unjust. I mean, that's what the lower court said in this case. And so they will not affirm an unjust result. Now, so they could do away with that entirely, which is going to radically reduce the quantum of punishment. So really what's going on here, Your Honor, the accused in this case would actually receive a greater benefit if this court were to say, The CCA can't send it back to the CA, and so the CCA's finding of inappropriateness is the final word. We're given that convening authority not a requirement to lower the sentence, grant mercy. We're actually giving him an opportunity to increase the sentence from what it would be if the CCA wasn't allowed to send it back to the CA with guidance that we're not going to affirm an unsuspended BCD. So they're giving the convening authority the discretion to say, okay, like in this case, you had a BCD and you had busting to E1. So you're saying to him, look, you can have bust to E1 and a suspended BCD. You can have bust to E1, and you know what? You could commute that BCD into some lesser form of punishment.
I think I understand your argument.
Yes, right. And so we're actually expanding the discretion of the CA rather than limiting it. And unless there are other questions from the court, the final point I'll make does regard the remedy, and that is, if this court were to determine that it will not disturb the CCA's determination that an unsuspended BCD is inappropriately severe, and if this court were to determine that a CCA may not send a case back to a CA for a new action in light of the CCA's determination of sentence appropriateness. This court should simply end this case, disapprove the BCD, which is consistent with lower court's determination that the BCD is inappropriately severe, and this case can be done. Unless the court has any further questions, that concludes our presentation.
Thank you very much, counsel. Government, do you have some measure of rebuttal?
I do.
Okay.
We take great exception with the word opportunity twice mentioned by the defense counsel. Opportunity for dialogue, opportunity to give the convening authority another chance to exercise what was his unfettered sole discretion in the first instance. The convening authority did not request another opportunity. He had the authority to suspend the sentence in the first instance. He chose not to, which was his legal right to do so.
So the government would rather the CCA disapprove the BCD, period.
Your Honor, the government says the CCA had two choices. One, disapprove the BCD or not.
And so that would be your druthers in the case rather than sending it back for some alternative.
Our druthers would be that if the CCA wants to change Article 60, they march down to Congress and
but you they agree that the they, law that you way. Agree that they have the ability to disapprove the BCD.
Absolutely, they
do. And that would be it.
They have that authority under 66.
Okay. And correct. So you would, in a case like this, you would rather, if in fact the CCA were to stick to its guns, you would rather see that than have it go back.
As long as they didn't abuse their discretion. Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, with respect to the concept of suspension, the question of whether the CCAs can get into that, my understanding of the history of that concept is that the UCMJ doesn't address it. That we said expressly, or our predecessor said expressly in the Simmons case, which is in 2CMA, that this matter isn't addressed in the UCMJ, and we're going to have to interpret the UCMJ, and that the court interpreted the UCMJ as not allowing the then boards of review to suspend.
Well, yes and no, Your Honor. Yes, it has required some court interpretation, but Article 60 itself says the convening authority has the authority to suspend.
Understand.
It does not say that in Article 66.
That's the interpretation that was given by the court in Simmons when it couldn't find express language. Then in Estelle, in 9CMA, this court, 1958, said that it's okay for the boards of reviews to get into suspension, and specifically said that where the convening authority has suspended a sentence, the Court of Criminal Appeals can look at the appropriateness of that and reduce the period of suspension.
Well, Your Honor, even Judge
is that case now up for review, and should we say no, the Courts of Criminal Appeals can never get into suspension in that sense and use suspension and abuse suspension for sentence appropriateness?
Even Judge Clark admitted that the CCA has no suspension authority. That was the predicate.
So is Estelle incorrectly decided in 9CMA? We were supposed to go back to 1958 and overrule that as well.
I don't think you need to reach that question to resolve whether this CCA violated Article 60 in the first instance.
Well, my question is, if we have a situation in which the court has looked upon suspension as a matter for interpretation, and has offered the following interpretations. In Simmons, it said the CCA can't initiate a suspension. In Estelle, the court said that the CCA, then the board's reviews, can look at the appropriateness of a suspension and reduce the period of suspension. And then in the subsequent cases that we've talked about, finally getting into the order of Bell, this court actually issued an order saying that the Court of Criminal Appeals can take another look at the case and decide whether to approve a sentence no greater than a suspension. If that's the body of law we're dealing with, and that body of law has been in place, why should we disturb it now?
Well, Your Honor, I think
your time is up, so I gather you're asking permission to continue, correct? Permission,
yes, Your Honor,
granted, but can you keep it brief?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, we think that the state of the law today is quite clear. CCAs do not have authority to suspend. I did not brief cases from the 1950, but we would argue that they have been superseded by the state of the law that even Judge Everett has acknowledged in his opinion in Clark. If there are any other questions.
Did that answer your question?
That answers the question.
Notwithstanding my rudeness, thank you.
May I briefly conclude?
You may.
The United States means no disrespect to Judge Everett or the CCA, but they were both absolutely mistaken when they violated Article 60. In reviewing the case law on CCA's standard under Article 66, Judge Kirkey's words in the unanimous Bear opinion from this court in 2005 are apt here. The lower court's opinion quotes an incorrect standard for determining sentence appropriateness. In using that language, however, the lower court cited a 19-year-old summary disposition of this court that was marred by a mistaken and misleading citation. That mistake is a weed in the garden of our jurisprudence. We will now pull it up by the roots. The United States respectfully asserts that the concurring opinion in Clark, footnote 4 in Healy, and the CCA decision simply cannot stand and must be reversed. They must be told. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both, counsel, for your argument. And we'll stand in recess until 25 past the hour.
Of course, stand in recess until 10:25.